Blog Talk Radio.
This is our third virtual poetry reading in conjunction with BardCon Virtual. Tonight we're featuring Spilled Ink, a wonderful poetry group down in Virginia, and we're actually fortunate enough tonight to have the founder and the coordinator of Spilled Ink here with us as a guest host. So say hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
Yeah, so we've had a very good response to these virtual readings so far. This is the second one we're doing in 2 days, and everybody seems to like it. So the way it's going to work tonight is Spilled Ink actually just released their first anthology, which is published by Local Gems Press. And there was actually going to be a live book launch today, but there was something going on in the world that I kind of forget, something about a beer run or something that's kind of keeping everybody in, well, kind of like a reverse beer run. So they're the featured slot tonight, so we're going to have readings from various Spilled Ink poets, and then we have some readings from some other poets. But before we get into the readings, John, could you just tell, you know, the people out there a little bit about Spilled Ink?
Spilled Ink is a celebration of the written word. We gather every 2 weeks. We do Spilled Ink Eats over at Tackett's Mill at the Clearbrook Center of the Arts on the second Friday of the month. And then on the fourth Friday of the month, we meet at Gerani Coffee House in Old Town Manassas. And anyone is welcome. If you wrote it, we want to hear it. So if you're free, come on out. We have a website, which is spilledinkva.com. And we also have a Facebook page of the same thing. You just have to look Spilled Ink VA under groups.
Awesome. Yeah, we've gone pretty national this week. We've had poets all from Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Long Island, Virginia, I think Wisconsin, North Carolina, Indiana, so we've been going all over the place. I think Nick just joined us. Are you here, Nick?
Yeah, I'm here. I got held up
at
Staples. Shout out to the guys in the Fairfax Staples, by the way, like, not that you're listening or anything. But those guys were awesome, and they helped me to my car, and then I realized I had no small bills, so I couldn't tip in money, but I'm tipping you in exposure. So, yeah.
Well,
hi, guys.
That's awesome because, you know, their rent is, I think, 1,200 exposures a month. So.
Oh, that's perfect. I can get them, like, 3 extra followers a week.
All right. Well, thank you, Fairfax Staples. So before we get started on the recorded readings, John, do you want to, as founder and coordinator of Spilled Ink, do you want to kick us off with a couple of your poems?
I have two poems from another member who I'm going to read because if that's the order, I have them on my phone right now. So I'll start off with two poems by Alice Mergler. Her first one is entitled, No Two Poems Are Alike in the Making. No two poems are alike in the making. Each poem is a living piece of your life with its own character and integrity. While you compose, you begin to adapt to its voice and emotions. Values and visions creep into focus like tiny ghost crabs scuttling across the newly washed sand. Your words start to harden into substance. Yet you pause often, sometimes though through tears or laughter or swathed in memories that can bind you up in a tourniquet for hours at a time. But then a sudden rush of civic energy like happens when the school bus announcements come on and your students hurl towards the door. When you think your poem is complete, actually a poem is never complete, part of you vanishes with it, and the only cure to find yourself is to start another poem. and that is No Two Poems Are Alike in the Making by Alice Merwin. Let me see. I think she has one more. The next one is called Hope. So this is Hope by Alice Merwin. Hope calls for action. Hope does not stand alone, but reveals strength, stamina, resiliency. Hope's blessed partner is prayer. I sometimes try to turn hope into an easy wish or time substance. It refuses to bend from its original use. And so my knees are bent towards our Father in heaven, and I pray that I will be patient with grim moments so that my dreams will be revitalized, knowing that life can be beautiful and is waiting with my hope and the legions of hope I receive from my friends, family. Hope buffets like the wind, but is never a river. Hope by Alice Merwin. All right, those are the first two I have from a still anchor.
I love those two. I mean, I guess I it's pretty obvious by the fact that I was editing the Spilled Ink anthology and I put them in there. But, yeah. I love Alice's poetry.
I don't write as serious as Alice does. I take mine into having a little fun. So this is called The Poet Not Chosen. And it was written on my third attempt to claim the crown of Poet Laureate of Prince William County. And we'll see how it goes. Here you go. The Poet Not Chosen. Three poets diverged with yellow notepads. And sorry I was not smarter than both, for I had ditched school to shoot some pool. And now I look down at my empty notepad to where I had only doodles and swirls. First, I looked at Robert Scott with his jet black hair, and he, having perhaps the better brain, only because I was gassy and needed clean underwear. Though, as for that fleeting moment, I had thought our skills were about the same. And Kathy Smalls that morning had equally slain me with boundless pages she had scribbled black. Oh, I kept my one couplet for another day. Yet, knowing how the muse has departed me, I doubted if I would ever win. I shall be telling this over a beer and chips somewhere ages and ages hence. Three poets diverged on a stage, and I was the one not chosen, and that has made not one bit of difference. That is The Poet Not Chosen. Yes.
I can relate to that one personally because I think I was runner-up for my local Poet Laureateship, I think, like three times also.
I enjoy writing it. All right, here's another one. It's called It Lurks Within. It lurks inside my pen. The ink prowls its dark den. It rears its mighty head, repeating all my mind has said. As lines of action uncontrollably roll, a mysterious plot begins to unfold. The monster moves at such a furious pace as dialogue, punctuation, and adjectives take their place. He creeps and crawls and drives me up the walls, but when he sleeps, I falter and I stall. Authors around the world have a monster of their own. Though they may think it, they're not scribbling alone. And that is It Lurks Within. All right, I have one more from the anthology. And I know many people are looking forward to getting the anthology. I know we're all stuck home with self-quarantining or social distancing, but I know many people are looking forward to getting the Spilled Ink anthology. It was our first one. It looks pretty nice from what I've seen. I know people are excited about it, so I'm looking forward to reading it. All right, this is my last poem from the anthology. It's Do Not Go Gentle Into That New Pair of Jeans. Do not go gentle into that new pair of jeans. Your waistline will churn and expand at close of day. Rage against salads and soybeans. Though I'll be thin at their end of day, crave Boston baked beans, because their hands held crab cakes with Old Bay. Do not go gentle into that new pair of jeans. Good men, the last wave by, devouring collard greens. Their frail thighs might have danced to Green Day. Rage, rage against salad soybeans. Wild men who fished and sang about their superior genes and learned too late they should have deep-fried it always. Do not go gentle into that new pair of jeans. Brave men near death who seek fast food by any means. Blind eyes could blaze like meteors by carrying full lunch tray. Rage, rage against salads and soybeans. And that's do not go gentle into those pair of jeans, in those new pair of jeans. And that's what I got.
I'm having flashbacks to getting fitted for my tuxedo for my wedding. Yeah, Nick's laughing because he remembers what it was like. The poor guy, and this was like a veteran suit fitter, had to mix and match like four different suits to fit my anomalous body type. So, yay, PTSD.
Well, hey, that guy was good. He only had to redo it once. Didn't you say you were expecting to have to do it like three times or three or more visits?
No, I mean
he only
had to take
one.
He only had to refit it once. Right. He had the articles from four different suits. So,
wow.
You know, because the leg size and the waist size didn't mix. But yeah, so thank you, John, for those three poems. That's great. And thank you for, you know, starting Spilled Ink so that, you know, we have this wonderful anthology that we have readings from tonight. And so going to get into a couple of the pre-recorded readings now.
I appreciate it. We're also going to do a virtual Spilled Ink. And I know Nick is going to join us whenever he's through doing your radio show. So, Nick, we'll see you later. We're on Zoom. So, whenever you get a chance, chime on in, okay?
All right, John, I'll be
Thanks,
there.
Guys,
thanks for joining us.
Take care.
See ya.
Yes.
Bye.
Thank you very much, John. Okay, so the first reader that we have from the Spilled Ink Anthology is Lucy Coons. So, and I believe this one has one of those wonderful musical accompaniments that we've kind of come to like so much and become spoiled with on doing these in the virtual realm. So let's take a listen to her.
Bodies in Heaven by Lucy Coons. Lately I've thought a lot about death. But I guess I always have, in that way young children are keenly aware that they fill the space between the bodies in heaven and those who lie in their graves. This is why we beg pardon when our toes touch the outline of the mounded casket buried 6 feet below, and the dead body is ever so much closer than we care to think. And all the while, the bees buzz, and a light on the clover heads that bend in the breeze, a soft blanket on the grave, to keep the earth warm for those beneath the soil, to keep the earth soft for those on the soil, to keep the earth inviting for those above the soil. But we know from birth that death, like life, is cyclical. That the parchment-skinned granny in the nursing home will soon die, that the mother will soon walk stooped, that the daughter will soon brush chestnut hair gray. But before there is gray, there is gold comfort of the sun that all children feel on their skin, lying in the grass, the clouds a drifting caress across the sky. The sky that all children know, like Copernicus, they just know, has the sun at its center and wakes us each morning like an alarm clock set by God to start each day of each week in the cycle of life that breathes through us with air that fills the space between the bodies in heaven and those who lie in their graves.
Wow. I really just can't believe, you know, the quality that some of these tracks have. You know, you'd think they were, like, you know, made in a professional studio, you know, like hundreds of dollars an hour for the equipment. You know, I think, like, the accompanying and the background of that poem, it really just, yeah, kind of takes you to a different plane of existence, you know?
I really enjoyed that. And the way Lucy was reading it, too, it just was very peaceful. It sort of added to the music. And, I just really enjoyed that. I've listened to that one before. That's, I think, the only one that people have sent in that I've listened to before we actually aired it. And so I kind of knew it was coming, and I still really enjoyed it, like it was the first time I was listening to it.
Yeah, no, definitely the background set the mood of the poem perfectly. So, you know, yeah, we're discovering all sorts of wonderful things in virtual world. So, next we have another one returning. This is her second appearance on the Bard's Poetry Revolution virtual readings for BardCon, but this time from the Spilled Ink Anthology. So give it up for Catherine Goddard.
Monitor by Catherine Goddard. All screens switch. Not momentarily, any millimoment. Count them in fractions. 1/100, 2. Dissolved into some vague animation where a single slide begets another. Crumbled pixels. The one before lost in the attention span of a short-sighted user. What matters is the next page, yes? What happens is the following, when nothing we knew carries over, yes? It's not too depressing. Everything is new. Everything is bad and good and different. The world doesn't wait for us to transition. Time doesn't care if we can stream as fast as it courses. A minute ago, I wrote this line. Now I write a second, and all is still okay, still, but still changed, morphed into the body electric, electrons building through the very blood of a keyboard, landing in fingers too tired to go on. But that has already happened. Googleplexian numbers of times, different editions, new issues, the next release, the way the cache empties with just one touch, and all we knew is no longer. All has slid to the next number that used to be hands and now are only reminders lodged on the monitor's corner that, though the digits turn slowly, seemingly, it's behind the scenes that counts. Something is keeping tabs. Best to keep here quickly if you really want to see. Best to look through the window crusted with years. Best to peel open your eyes and watch the firing of everything. See how everything ignites. Now untitled. For everyone missing their mother, I offer you a memory of mine. She hugged strangers, invited the lonely to dinner in her own home, fed everyone too much turkey and ravioli, sometimes canned ham too, and she always mailed us Easter baskets even when we were grown. All that cheap chocolate wrapped up in too much tape. I wear mom on my hips, laugh as loudly as she did, whisper her name, cough a little. What's got me by the throat? Pollen, the dogwood and pear. You know how those spring trees are, throwing blossoms around. As if wastefulness were okay. As if we all will be.
You know, my first comment on that is, you know, like, Nick, have you noticed how many poems are titled untitled?
Yeah, but this one is not titled untitled. It's titled Now Untitled.
That's a good point. So this one was unique in that regard. But I mean, I've just noticed that a lot of times you're reading people like, this is untitled, and I'm like, wow, I need to make a poem that's titled that now. But these things you discover is that.
Yeah, I know some people. I know some people refuse to title their poems.
And some people just put numbers, you know, like our friend Doug Sweezy,
right,
who's up to, like, almost poem number 1,500. So
I prefer numbers to untitled because, as an editor, it's much easier to title things. It's like, oh, yeah, we've accepted your poem.
Yes, we've accepted
which
your
one
poem.
I sent you too. Yeah.
You know. So, but yeah, I mean, I remember Doug Sweezy. It took him like over the 10-year period since, like, I remember we started Local Gems. He was like, it's on like 700 something, and now it's like 1480 or something. It's funny, but yeah. But speaking of, you know, that reading, that second poem there kind of hit a chord with me for a couple of reasons. One, the food, because you know, growing up with Italians in your family, you know what the food is like. But also, because you know, I mean, luckily my mother is, you know, still alive and kicking, but you know, lost my grandmother a couple months ago, so any memory poems about a relative are kind of hitting my soft spot at the moment. So
yeah, I enjoyed both of those again. Like, so I've read them before, but like I say all the time at every anthology launch, it's very different reading something on the page versus hearing someone read it, and sometimes it sort of hits you differently. So even though I read those while I was editing the Spillbank anthology, it was nice to hear Catherine read them and, you know, you get the little differences between how I read it in my head and how she read it aloud.
Yeah, the poet always adds, you know, the inflections about how they meant to do it, so it's always much better. So the next reader that we have here is Morgan Hazelwood.
Morgan Hazelwood with When Love Breaks, a short series on the end of a relationship. Misfit. Hot, glowing rush, hearts warmed and dancing, together enthralled, two souls belonging. Lives intertwined like their warm bodies after dark, shifting and twisting till everything feels just right. Growing and thriving, growing and changing, twisting until it hurts, trying to make it still work. The hearts now misfit until they recognize and admit where they're at. The goodbye. Ghost. The memory of your hands touching me, your love encompassing and surrounding. Those days long ago when I was still yours and you, without a doubt, were mine. Before you resented me for what you'd had, what you'd said you wanted for me. Possession and jealousy can be ugly. And now you've not but my ghost coat. The years are clinging to the walls, the faded paint, the dirt, the chips, waiting for the one who used to call, whose name now lingers on your lips. But now it's time to clear the hall and learn now the moving on script. Freeze. When she turned and walked away, he'd thought his heart would burst. The pain, it came in waves at first. But day by day, it slowed. Till finally the day it came, he saw her on his feed and blinked. No pain, no tear, no sad refrain. He'd never thought his heart could heal. Thank you. That was Morgan Hazelwood with The End of a Relationship.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think the thing that stuck out for me the most of that one was, you know, in the second part, you know, when it's like about, you know, like, blame me for what you said you want. And that just, it always reminds me of, you know, that scene from Bruce Almighty, you know, with Jim Carrey and Morgan Freeman, where he becomes God, and, you know, Jim Carrey, like, he gets all those prayers, he just says yes to everybody, and at the end, like, you know, when it obviously created a fiasco, and he's telling Morgan Freeman, he's like, I thought if I just gave everybody what they wanted, it'd be great, and Morgan's like, since when does anybody have a clue what they want, you know?
Yeah, and often trying to just please everyone just gets you people mad at you for some reason, and so I like just in general how relatable it is. But also, mm-hmm. See, I know a little bit more about Morgan, and also probably most of the readers we'll hear tonight I know she does, I think it's weekly vlog. Sorry, don't be mad at me, Morgan. I know we were just talking yesterday about this. So she's a vlogger and a writer. And so I'm guessing has some experience recording audio also, because just the way she used her voice as she was reading, it reminded me almost of a voice actress.
Yeah.
Somebody who definitely knows. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, seemed comfortable behind the microphone for sure.
Yeah.
So, unlike me, who gets stage fright all the time in front of everybody, always, I have to hide.
I have to make a fool of myself on stage, and then it's all better. So if I ever make a mistake, ever, when you see me on stage, that's the only reason I do it. I never make a mistake by accident.
Never. It's not like you read from a script that's 3 years old or, out of the wrong book or anything like that. It's all just part of shtick. So just remember that, everybody, for future reference. So the next reader, and also, you probably know more about all the Sealed Ink readers than I do, but some of the other readers on here I probably know more about than you. Ah, Nina, Nina.
Well, that's what I meant. I wasn't making an accident by saying that. I was setting you up to be brave and point out my mistake.
You just said it on purpose so that it would make me feel better about my stage fright, right?
Exactly.
There you go. You see how we work, ladies and gentlemen? You see? This is how we go. So next reader that we have here is Heather Stevens. So let's give it up for her.
Disappointment of many, she carried burdens of more than plenty, speaking her truth lest condemning. This wasn't all she carried. The life and death of those unseen, loss of numerous hopes and dreams, weighted by empty guilt, it seems. So much she carried. Nakedness and shamed by her own bear, yet still she carried faith in the night to become morning, third eye awakened, taking heed to all warning, love so open and ready for giving.
Loving what people are doing with music and their poetry tracks, and the way the music sort of accentuated the pauses and allowed for longer pauses. Because if you were reading that at a Spilled Ink or some other open mic, and you were up there and you paused for that long, people would start clapping because they would think you were done. But the music lets you pause for longer, which adds a little bit more drama to the pause. So I really like that.
Yeah, well, you know, that old saying that music is, you know, what happens between the notes, you know, kind of the same thing. And, you know, pacing when it comes to delivery is definitely important. And, yeah, I was thinking something very similar about how, yeah, those little breaks in between really kind of add when the words come back. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We're going to have to start bringing, like, big, heavy, like, equipment to, you know, to reading live in the future so we can make stuff like this happen. So.
It's funny you say that. I think John and I were actually talking about that the other day. He wanted to set up his laptop from now on at Spilled Ink and record the audio.
There you go.
So,
you know,
not
like,
quite
all
big, heavy equipment. But.
Yes. Well, somebody better bring a dolly then because I don't want to carry it. So, so next reader we have, I am familiar with the next reader we have, Ha, because he was also at Nova Bards and got to meet him in October at the launch there, is Brian James, who has a couple of poems he's going to share.
Good evening. My name is Brian Donald James, and I would like to read three selections from the Spilled Ink Anthology. The first piece is entitled Blind. Yet even when I close my eyes and fall into the abstract art, ablaze in color against my inner blackness, your image beckons through, an outline etched in a vivid shade. In stellar points of light, I see you, like moonbeams on the dark seas of my mind. And on this shoreline of eternity, I stand on notice, on the abyss of an endless void. As you ebb and flow with my pulse, you are the pattern of my heartbeat. And when I close my eyes, I find myself almost wishing to be blind, if only to touch you in new dimensions and make love to you in new depths, go deeper than thy flesh. I want to know thy essence, where marrow and bone are replaced with stardust and cosmos, where your soul is free. I want to know you there, my love. And yes, I would choose to remain blind, to be forever cast in ebony, save for your likeness, save for your image, for this would be the better blessing, indeed, my heaven. Thank you. The next piece is entitled Hidden Tongues. If we never speak again, please know that I want you, because having you would uplift my earth and grow my flowers and fill my streams and make the child in me laugh. So be my air and flow through me, know me inside and out. And if we never speak again, the chances of you and I will perish. So breathe life into yourself. Push your love so that I might see, so that I might act, so that we might find our hidden tongues. But should we fail, dearest one, please know that your likeness is forever locked in my secrets and will live on. It shall live on. Thank you. And the last piece is entitled Wife. I will not take any moment for granted. My spirit shaped in clay for this is short while. I count them, the days and years of moments. And within this framed finite space of precious time, I live to love and grow with you. As you move in ballet and you speak jazz, you were my first, and you will be my last. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Thank you. He has such a smooth, elegant reading voice.
I know. I knew this were going to be good. I can't wait for you to record more things. I hope you record more things and send us, because I really enjoyed listening to those. You should make yourself a poetry audiobook.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of actually wondering about like that for a lot of poets now that we've been, you know, kind of forcing them to start, you know, recording. I mean, some of them were doing it already on their own anyway, and clearly are, you know, pretty advanced in doing so. Some of them are doing this for the first time, but I was kind of wondering now if, you know, maybe there might not be an uptick in, like, audiobooks or something like that releases, or, you know, poets releasing kind of like spoken word albums or something now that this is going on, since at the present moment the book supply lines are, you know, at least a little delayed. So I'm just, you know, thinking, like, I wonder how many of these we're going to start seeing now.
Another thing John and I have kind of talked about, because some of the Spilled Inkers, as you've heard already, have some really great reading voices and know how to use a microphone. So I think it would be an excellent collection. And even outside of Spilled Ink, you know, you and I in our travels have met a lot of poets who have really great reading voices. Like I was speaking with Brian earlier this week, actually, and I said, you know, I almost want to send you my poems to read, because I think they would sound a lot better with you reading them. because I think it's true, especially for a couple of the ones I have. I think with his voice, they would sound awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, it's another type of, you know, poetic collaboration, because, you know, there are plenty of poets out there, believe it or not. Well, I mean, I know you believe it, but for the audience, believe it or not, there are plenty of poets out there who actually don't like the sound of their own voice, and they don't like reading their own poems, and they don't like actually doing that. So actually, you know, kind of having like sort of like pseudo professional poem readers, you know, to do it for you might actually be, you know, something. You know, I could see a future where people go around just to do that. You know, like, oh, I'm here to read so and so's poems for them.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm one of those people. Like, as much as I talk, you'd think, oh, I'd love to hear myself talk, but no. I actually never listen to any of the stuff that we record, because I just can't stand listening to myself talk. So I understand perfectly. If you're one of those people out there, you're not alone.
So you burden me with having to listen to you talk. So thanks.
Exactly. But, I mean, you're used to it.
Yes. So thank you for that. You know, but just because I'm used to it doesn't mean it's any more pleasant, you know. So.
Well, I mean, everybody else could enjoy me talking. It's just me.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm somebody else, and I don't enjoy you talking. No, just kidding. But
no, it's so, like the one person who doesn't like chocolate, you know.
Ba-da-da. So that would be like the chocolate factory not liking chocolate. So bad analogy. But I'm familiar with this next too, because he was also from Nova Bards and the Nova Bards anthology. So let's give a listen to Anant Gaval.
Hi, this is Anant Dhawale here, and I'm going to read three of my poems from the Spilled Ink anthology. The first one is titled On Understanding and Other Such Myths. It's a four-part poem. Part one, there's a void I inherently try to fill. It's almost incomprehensible. I toil nonetheless across the lanes and by-lanes, hills and the valleys of worlds, real and unreal. But the void is omnipresent. Logic has failed me, and religions have misled me, mostly. I look at the old people. They look so calm beyond the gray hair. Been through good and bad, maybe they weren't what they are now. Part two. There's fire and moon from where it all began, to create the unmade, to annihilate the created. Create, a voice said, and it all came to being. Reminiscences linger, mountains, rivers, oceans, people. Part three, Mithya. You see all of this, you, me, this world, is a magnificent lie, said the poet. Before he was pelted with stones, smallest amongst the atoms, expansive than the sky. Some said he disappeared. Some said he was dragged from a bridge before being killed. Gods, they said, came down and took him along unto the heavens. We believed them. Part 4. The layer thickens, the songs that we sing, the love that we make, the sadness that we feel, the pain that's throbbing in my knee right now, all beyond an ancient veil, the discernment, just an illusion, brilliantly ornate. Second poem, it's titled, So Much Lingers on a Lone Leaf. Not a story, but a few dots. All the charities and the endeavors a little feeble, faded. One long road of trees all along, each with a lifetime. So much hinges on a lone leaf. Hope, a big red sun, arising every morning. Third poem. It's titled Ode to Virginia. You lay the bricks one by one, bend before the waves bit by bit, die from within the chromosomes, thread by thread. All this while, Virginia smiles at you through her nightly rains and the scattered woods, peeping from beyond the well-built roads. Thank you.
You know, I always
again,
like
thank you
Yeah, I always like poems where people actually kind of, you know, dedicate them to like specific regions and things like that, because, you know, listening to enough of those and reading enough of those, you kind of get like the different flavor for like a lot of different places.
Yeah, and you get an idea of sort of what's common and what's important to those places.
Yeah, I know. And,
I mean,
you know,
as
like,
somebody
and
who's
in every regional anthology we do, I always like to include, like, at least, you know, I mean, if they're submitted, I like to include at least one or two of those, because you kind of find different topics, different themes, and, you know, kind of, you know, more common depending on what region the poetry is coming from. And it's actually really cool because you kind of get, like, a whole flavor of different parts of America, you know, Canada, you know, Mexico, you know, the UK. You get, like, you know, just, you know, the heart and the pulse of it kind of comes through in the writing, and it's really cool.
Yeah, and it becomes more about people, you know, like a lot of times when we think about places, we think about countries, and this might seem a little sappy or overly sentimental, but, you know, we see other countries in terms of those other places rather than, or like the microcosm or macrocosm, excuse me, of the culture, rather than like individuals who are actually there and the things that are important to their day to day. So we think about, oh, what that country is doing or what that group of, where that group of people is going or what they eat or what they like. We don't think about, okay, well, these people in this specific town are very friendly and hospitable. And if you go over there, they'll tell you about this one lake that they like to go visit or whatever it is, the thing that's sort of important to that small section of the population.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And then, you know, if you're around there or whatever, you start to do like research about like, you know, the local stuff, you know, the happenings, and sometimes like local legends or things like that too come out in the poems, and it's really cool.
Oh yeah, some of those are really good. I mean, someone who's traveled a lot, like one of the first poetry readings I ever went to, you were there because you're the one who dragged me there, back on Long Island. Somebody was reading a poem about I think pretty much everybody who lives on Long Island has one poem about Lake Ronkonkoma. It seems like a lot of people write about that lake. And this is the first time I'd ever actually heard that legend. I didn't know much about Ronkonkoma. I didn't travel too far outside of Huntington. So for anybody who's familiar with Long Island geography, that makes sense. For anybody not, Long Island is made up of a lot of towns, and some people live in a bubble and don't get very far outside of their own town. And that was me. My town was really big. But it was
a
big town made up of a bunch of small towns.
If you live on
towns.
Long Island or any island, you sometimes forget that there's a whole big world out there other than the island, too. So, but, yeah, for those who don't, you know, since we've just mentioned the Princess Ronkonkoma legend, there's a lake in Ronkonkoma here on Long Island, and the legend is that, like, I forget the particulars of, you know, like, there was some mishaps and happenings with the Native American, you know, daughter of a Native American chief who, you know, drowned in the lake, and then, you know, and she was apparently, like, betrothed to be married. I forget, like, the exact particulars of the origin, but the basic part of the legend is that every year there is at least one young man under the age of 21 who goes swimming in that lake and drowns. And I don't know exactly how accurate that is that it happens every year, but it happened enough years for people to start saying that that happened every year. And so that's kind of like the local legend is that, you know, the princess, you know, the Native American princess of Ronkonkoma haunts, you know, that lake. So, you know, pretty interesting local legend.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have one more. Go ahead,
Nick. Well, I did have another funny story. I mean, come on. I was living in Texas. Somebody wrote a poem that brought it to a workshop about driving around in Arlington and, you know, by Ranger Stadium and all that. And then when I moved up here to Virginia, I was at a workshop and somebody brought in a poem about driving around in Arlington, you know, the cemetery and right by D.C. It's supposed to be funny because there are two Arlingtons. Yeah, you know. I know it was a complex geography joke, so...
Yes, visual aid. No, but yeah, just like there's a million Burlingtons, there seems to be a Burlington almost everywhere you go. But so we have one more Spilled Ink reader, and it's not me. So this is the second anthology feature in a row where I don't have a poem in the anthology. I'm going to get a complex. I'm going to need therapy. But so, Nick, would you like your poem from Spilled Ink?
Yeah, hold on. Let me find a copy of the anthology since I'm like the only one in the world who has it right now. That will change very soon. So I didn't mean to rub that in.
Yes, for those out there waiting for books of any kind from Local Gems, the supply lines are still active. They're just a little bit slower because all the printers are working with not as many people.
Yeah.
So
I got mine about a week. I got these copies about a week later than I was supposed to. So things are going. They're just a little bit slower than we're used to. So yeah, they'll get there. All right. Well. Speaking of regions, oh man, I forgot I sent this one in. So everyone I know from New York, at least, who was alive during the time, knew someone who knew someone who barely survived 9/11. You know, who, there was an accident, they were stuck in traffic, they left their wallet at home and they had to go back for it, they left, you know, from the train station, or they left something on the train. Everybody's got a story like that, and that's kind of what inspired this. This is 11. Married 10 years, finally arrived. The house, the kids, the big job in the city. Up first, dress fast, beat the school bus rush. On a rail, ready, meetings all day. Sway to travel's rhythm, write speeches in head. Play scenes of success. Roll through Jamaica, panic sets in. Gropes the empty space where the disc had been. No presentation, no meetings, no scenes, no success. Sigh of frustration, go back, can make it. Turning a page. To the car, upstream traffic, key in the door, warm embrace, hot tears, thank God you're safe. On TV, the world changes, lives collapse, like parallel relationships, like looming dread of loss, like crumpled paper in a storm of smoke. Stay home today, love. Please, stay home.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that in New York, everybody pretty much knew somebody, or, you know, if they didn't know somebody directly, somebody that they cared about knew somebody, so it was,
I was lucky. My dad got moved out of the city. Not lucky for him, because he had to drive to Westchester every day, but he was basically stranded in Westchester County, which is, for those of you who don't know New York geography, is upstate New York. So in order to get from our home on Long Island to his job, he would have to drive through New York City, which is basically closed. I think he considered taking the ferry home from Connecticut at one point.
Yeah, well, I could definitely see how that would have occurred. So, but, you know, in some ways, like, you know, it feels like we're kind of there's a similar mood in the atmosphere right now as to what I remember the mood of 9/11 being like, you know, both the good and the bad, because obviously you got the uncertainty and the, you know, the anxiety and the fear and all that, but people are also kind of, you know, at least people in my circles that I've been seeing all over, the people are being kinder to each other and more understanding of each other and supporting each other. So, you know, you get that too.
I've definitely noticed that. I was having a conversation with someone who didn't think that after 9/11 that period lasted as long as it did. So maybe it was because we were in high school that we experienced it for much longer, but I'm definitely feeling that sort of extra concern for each other. I mean, as I was driving away from the Staples earlier today, I thought, since when has be safe been something that you would say to somebody like you would say, you know, Happy New Year, or it's kind of like, I have a good day, but that's kind of what it's become, where it's kind of like a general, what's the opposite of greeting, you know, that thing you say as you're parting with someone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I've for years, I've always said get home safe when people are leaving from an event. So, you know, I'd like to get a quarter every time somebody says that, because I started it. No, it is true. People are definitely giving, you know, they're taking that extra time to, you know, express the humanity, and it is something that's really kind of shining through, at least that I'm noticing, you know. So really, you know, it's kind of like the Japanese, the crisis opportunity, the two sides of the same coin. So, brings us to the conclusion of the spilled ink portion of the virtual poetry reading, but don't go anywhere, because we got several more good readers. In fact, the first one that we have up here is actually the former poet laureate of the entire state of Kansas, Kevin Rabus, who also is sharing a musical accompaniment with his poems. So this is going to be another one of those good things that we have come to become spoiled on. So give it up for Kevin Rabus.
Instrumental intro. That first brushes rough to kick the tune, then in comes the organ, B3, and warms me like a bourbon shot, like a hand over my heart, or a winter kiss, snow like angels all around. The estranged, the ones the door shuts to with a wood and metal click, to the lonely, the ones who would be lovers but their loves walked off with the pretty, the slick, the rich, to the ones with five-string guitars who play and save for that snapped sixth string, for the drummers with beat-up drums who keep their heads tuned the best they can and play soft and wait for that crescendo and fill it with grain, with water, with blue fire, with a crowd of new hands, hands and wheat, hands and wheat, hands and wheat. To the ones you ignore but never ignore you, this poem of love is for the ones the estranged. This poem full of my loneliness and nights spent alone in the dark, new moon nights, cool colored nights, nights where the owl call is for you. I hear you. I see you. I'll be with you when you open to this page. Yours will never be nights alone. My voice is here across time and space. And when you sing, I'm here on rhythm guitar, on bass, on drums, on harpsichord and violin. Horn. Nights I lent him my horn, afternoons I wrapped my hands around the horn bird blew. This was not unusual. Bird was often without a horn. He'd blow in the town and everyone would offer him one. He'd play anything. Played a plastic saxophone specially made just above the level of a toy in Toronto, I'm told. They kept it, put it in a museum, piece of plastic, played once, full of only his spit. I didn't learn a thing from him, except to keep my hands on my horn, keep my hands on my horn, keep my hands on my horn, whatever horn I have. Art Frank's speed bag. I used to hit the speed bag and play triplets. That's how I got my quick style. Boxing and drumming some days became the same thing. I tell the younger guys when they come up to play, don't say it all in one round. Remember you have 10, and don't solo until the end. Too many guys play fours and eights, even in the first song. Wasted energy. Save it for the end. Make a big flourish. End big.
A fan of music.
I really enjoyed that. And I'm not just talking about the drums, the drums were awesome. And it was a different type of music than what most of the poems we've been hearing accompany. But as a fan of music, just in general, and sort of the tune of the poems themselves was very nice. I would love to hear those live, especially with the drums, because I could just picture what it would be like, and especially if it was a smaller room with a hardwood floor and you can kind of feel the vibration coming off of the drums as he's playing them. It would be awesome.
Yeah, and I know that that Kevin actually, the book that he actually published with Local Gems Press was called Late for Cymbal Line, and it actually had a set of cymbals on the front, because he also does, a lot of music, and drumming with poetry, and he actually, at some of his events, he kind of, melds both of them. He was also the editor of the Kansas version of Bards Against Hunger, and we actually had him out to Long Island for a reading at the Belmore Bean a couple years ago, and we had a packed house for that, and he did a little bit of drumming there. Obviously, he couldn't bring his huge drum set on the plane, but he had, some small stuff that he was doing, and it was, it was really entertaining. So, and for those of you who like that, they want to actually know, I actually have about a 45-minute interview with Kevin Robbis actually up on the BardCon virtual website that we took a few months ago. That's all about, him being poet laureate and about what he does and, how he got there and, all the travels of poetry and stuff. So if you want to hear more about him or listen to that, it's a good listen. So you can find that right on the homepage of the BardCon website. So,
if you've been keeping up with our virtual readings so far, too, about once a reading, I say, oh, that's a poet I've heard about all the time and I've never got to hear their voice. Kevin is the poet I'm going to point out on this one because I hear about him all the time. And I've seen his poetry, but I've never actually gotten to hear him read it. So I really appreciate that, too.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe if he's ever traveling by Virginia, you get him to feature down there for you.
Definitely.
Yeah, you hear that? You hear that, Kevin? Open invite to feature if you go down by Virginia. So, speaking of poets who do a lot of poetic things, the next up we have is Debbie Kilday. from, you know, she's the co-founder and the curator and organizer for the National Beat Poetry Foundation based in Connecticut. You know, somebody that Local Gems has published a lot of anthologies for, and they have that the festival, you know, every, you know, in the early fall every year. And, you know, they have beat laureates, you know, all around the country and the world. And this was actually her poem from the goddess reading that she did a couple of weeks ago, which, like I said, was, you know, the last very well-attended poetry event I went to before the world ended. So let's give it up for Debbie Kilday.
A Goddess or King by Debbie Tosin Kilday. As he looked at her, what he saw was a goddess, a queen. She was everything every man desired. Her lips as soft as rose petals, her kiss like thorns piercing his soul, her eyes dark as the night, making his visions and fantasies become realities. The touch of her fingertips caused electric sparks to dance across his body like flecks of light, to bring his mind to ecstasy and flight. She fulfilled every fantasy, cared for his every need, making him feel like a king. Taking his scepter, the bed, his throne, he partook of her nectars, thinking only of his pleasure. Taking no care, he manipulated her, forced her into submission, breaking her spirit, only to take more but giving less. No time was taken to fulfill his queen. Her needs were of no importance. She gave him her all, but he did not return her affection, only taking for his own her pleasures. One day, she was gone, as swiftly as a raven's wings, fluttering to places unknown, never to return. There is a lesson here, my friends. Nurture your goddess, or miss her forever. If you pay attention, you will feel boundless energy, swirling in a hot wind of frenzy, causing unending passion, propelling those in its trance to see beyond the reign of sorrows, beyond the limitations put upon the human race, limitless in its power to mold you from broken to bouncing with joy like a child with a favorite toy. Don't take it for granted, because if it's true and pure, if it's given freely, there are no endings, just new beginnings. You hear of love lost. It's true. But is it? If you found it once, don't lose hope. You can find it again. Accept it. Nurture it. Succumb to its spell. Because that's what love does. It can make mere mortals a goddess or king.
Yeah, I really like that one, and I actually got to hear that read out loud at the Goddess event. There was a lot of, you know, pretty sassy and pretty good poetry at that event that I was a fan of. But, you know, this one kind of, you know, I think that, you know, even though this one's kind of talking more in the romantic sense, I kind of think right now this is very relevant just in the general sense because, you know, it's a time when we all should be nurturing, taking care of each other. And, you know, there's a saying actually in, you know, like about healthy relationships. They say, you know, if both parties are focused on, you know, making the other one happy, then both sides are having their needs met. But that only works if both sides are doing it. Otherwise, you just have a taker. You know?
You're right, exactly. It takes a level of trust to be able to do that. But once you have that, that's, you know, really nice.
Yeah, it's also funny because one of the things that, you know, relationship counselors talk about all the time is, like, in the beginning of the relationship, you know, I mean, even, you know, both romantic and friendships, it's like everybody, you know, people actually listen to what each other say at first, and they also, you know, are trying to actually kind of put their best foot forward and kind of, you know, compromise a lot more and trying to actually do what the other person wants. And then, like, at some point in the middle of it, there's, like, a switch that goes off, and suddenly it's like, me, you know? And that's
really,
like, when things
part of it. I think also part of it is that people are like, oh, I've known them for this long, so I know what they want. So instead of actually listening to what they're saying, they just figure they already know, so they kind of tune it out. Because I've seen that happen, you know, where people just, you know, they think, oh, you hate strawberries. Of course you wouldn't want this, you know.
I know a real-life example of, you know, somebody who for 7 years had convinced themselves that this other person didn't like beans, because one time they offered them something that had beans in it and they said, no, thank you. And somehow in their mind they had artificially created the association between beans and not wanting it, to the point that in their memory they could literally remember the other person saying, I don't like beans, when they actually never said that. And so it just created like this 7 years of miscommunication just because of something so simple and stupid like that. And I'm just thinking, like, it's hilarious how many times that we probably do that, like, just, you know, without even realizing that's what we're doing.
Yeah. It's silly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, part of it is that whole, like, once you learn something, you expect that you're an expert at it sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why teaching teaching intermediate-level things is actually more difficult than teaching beginners, because absolute beginners know they don't know anything. That's why sophomores are called sophomores. A little bit of Greek, sophomore is translates roughly to wise fool. Or a learned fool, so it's somebody who has some education, and then assumes that everything they know is basically everything there is to know, which a lot of sophomores do, in my experience, as a former one and as a former teacher of one. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why the journey from, you know, novice to intermediary is a lot quicker, usually, than intermediary to expert. So,
yeah.
This next poet that we got is Robert Fleming. He's been in, I don't know how many different anthologies now, but he also is probably
the
poet.
I know that guy.
Yes, I know you know that guy. I know that guy, too, because this guy's actually been to poetry events with us in how many states now? I've kind of lost track. At least three, because I know I've seen him in at least Virginia,
I think it's more like five or six.
And New York, because he came up for the Whitman Convention. So, but this poem of his is actually from the relatively newly released Sand Dune Poetry Anthology, so let's give it up for Robert Fleming.
Robert Fleming, reading from Sand Dune Poets of Delaware, page 17 through 18. I don't howl. I do what I'm told, and I keep my mouth shut. I have nothing to say. I say nothing. I live the Brady Bunch show. My blood is filled with wood paneling. I go into the booth and vote and wear the sticker. I never use sugar. I empty pink packets into my cup. I was veins of saccharin until it was cancer. I emptied blue packets into my cup. I was pee of sweet and low. Until there were yellow jackets. I empty yellow packets into my cup. I am cells of Splenda. I copulate three times a week. Only now, since I am married, and only with my spouse. I always use condoms when having intercourse. And only use water-soluble lubricant. Once a week, I watch porn, alone, on the internet, and masturbate. I confess. I do not have a cell phone, and I do not text. When a person speaks to me, I look at them. For 2020, this is my howl.
One thing I love about Robert is he doesn't shy away from any topic, like, ever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Was that I'm curious. I'd like to ask them to Robert if you're listening. Is that a response to the confession poem prompt?
Actually, I think it might have been actually because I think he also may have sent that one in for the Poet's Almanac, master text that we're actually doing. But I would have, don't quote me on that officially. I'd have to double check. And the last thing I need is like 3 years from now somebody to listen back at this and be like, yeah, that is 2020. You said this, and I'll be like, sorry. Then they'd be like, too late. What?
You know, that happens to people all the time these days too. You have to be careful. I enjoyed it. And one of the things I enjoy about Robert's poetry is even when he's going to those sorts of topics, it's never like distasteful. You know,
yeah.
Like a lot of people will, a lot of people kind of handle it in a sort of a gratuitous way, but there's a difference between that and a little bit of finesse. And
yeah,
I think
or just
Robert
like
has
plain
that
old,
finesse.
It's like plain old honesty, you know, like because he's just, you know,
yeah.
There's so much truth and honesty in the poems that he has, you know, so it's like it's not there for shock value, it's just real, you know, so it's
right.
That's definitely, it makes it definitely entertaining. So this next poet we have, who actually for those who are following along at, you know, BardCon Virtual, there's going to be a presentation from him actually on Rhyme and Meter up on the website probably in the next couple of days. Because we're still working out exactly what the time frame is going to be on when we're going to have that period of things uploaded every single day. But truthfully, I think we've been uploading things pretty much every single day anyway. So I guess it's just one big long convention at this point. But this is Alex Edward Boudre, who's a poet from Long Island and part of the Samantha's Little Bit Heaven poetry group. So give it up for Alex.
In the Eye by Alex Edwards Boudre. To learn to love, look no further than in the eye. Really look. You'll see vulnerability quivering on the tear duct ledge, fear or desire floating in the play of gleams where the light of life transforms the world beyond. Tiny vessels that carry threads of pain or weariness across the fragile globe, intricate, infinite possibilities laced through the iris wreath around the dark pupil well. Look harder. You'll see invitations in the pristine lake that fills the lonely crater. Mirrors reflecting mountains and clouds, glacial or fleeting, like your own formations. Even the air that bathes the strong invisible membrane protecting this precious creation. Nothing unchanging, all in silent motion, seeking its meaning in your contemplation.
And for those who are paying attention to where these poems are come from, that was actually Alex's poem from the Poets to Come anthology. So we've had a few of those now. So maybe when we get enough, we'll do just a Poets to Come virtual reading. But I, for one, am always a big fan of Alex's, you know, recitations. He's the kind of guy who you almost think his first words were an iambic pentameter.
Yeah, no, that was great. And you know, it was sort of, you know, going back to talking about poems with sort of a meditative feel to it, I would put that one on the list, but it was also sort of scientific in a way, with at the risk of sounding silly. So it was kind of a cool merging of the science and the spiritual.
Yeah. Oh, that's just so silly. Nobody ever does that. No, but...
No, it's just the way I said it. It was like, it's like scientific in a way, like, I don't know, like numbers and stuff. Like that's kind of how I felt when I said that, so I had to throw that in there just in case I sounded like that.
Yeah, like, you know, I learned a book the other day. You know, I agree, though. I mean, you know, because Alex's poetry is always very liberate, you know, like, especially being, you know, in a workshop group with him, it's like it's very, you know, there's... Like, nothing he does is by chance. It's all, every single syllable is properly planned out. So, you know, there's definitely an extreme precision. But, and also, the Samantha's Little Bit of Heaven Poetry Workshop is actually has like a faith-based tint to it. So, pretty much I see the scientific and the faith with him happen all the time. So, yeah, it's not silly at all. So, thank you, Alex. And if you guys want to, again, tune into his presentation, it should be up, you know, in the convention feed in the next couple of days, hopefully. So the last recording that we have for the evening is from Virginia Shreve, who is a Connecticut-based poet and also a member of the National Beat Poetry Foundation. She's been in the, one of the Connecticut Poetry Review books and plenty of the National Beat anthologies, and this was her poem that was from the Goddess anthology that was most recently launched. So give it up for Virginia.
Resume Unrepentant by Virginia Shreve. Did you never drink too much, smoke too much, kiss someone wildly unsuitable, hitchhike, trespass, ride motorcycles, date bass players, drug runners, ex-cons, chain gangs, allow an Italian restoration expert at the Louvre to ply you with wine after being up all night on the Orient Express talking to Irish terrorists? Did you never swim naked, trailing phosphorus in the night sea, find a bloody handprint on your doorway on Siesta Key, just a mild stalking? Did you never say to yourself, this could kill me, and do it anyway, and again, and maybe again? Did you never sing, laugh, talk, dress loudly, dance, behave badly, live extravagantly and not well, get on a train without knowing where it was going, join a revolution, spend your grocery money on an antique silk tablecloth embroidered with bluebirds, or a nag in the sixth named after a French poet? Did you never greet the dawn in last night's party dress, red high heels in hand, pretend you were someone named Loretta or Blaze, find yourself perched on the twitching shoulders of an acrobatic comedian riding a 5-foot unicycle on a stage, on a cruise ship, in the rolling North Sea? Sometimes it just happens. Did you never eat too much, juices running down your chin, belly tight like a skin drum? Did you never drink too much, smoke too much, kiss someone wildly unsuitable? No? No? Were you knitting?
What's wrong with bass
really
players, first of all? Yeah, me too. But bass players, come on, man, they're not that bad. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I might have done a few of those things. I know the feeling of eating too much to the point where it, yeah. So I understand a few, though. But I really enjoyed that, all, especially that last line. That kind of just sealed it all.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I can't say I've ever pretended my name was Loretta. Somehow I don't think it would work, with the beard and
no.
all. But,
I mean, I was called Brunhilde once. I think that's as close as I get. By someone who wasn't happy with his designated nickname.
Well, funny how often that happens. Yeah, so thank you, Virginia.
Yeah.
That was a great reading, and, I love the comedic ending of that poem. So that's all that we have for the recordings for the evening, like I said. But we do have one more remaining schmuck of a poet named Ishwa, or James P. Wagner. This is not from the Spilled Ink anthology, because, again, this is the second anthology reading in a row where I didn't have a poem in the book, so, again, I'm going to need some therapy. But this poem is from one of my books called 10-Year Reunion, and it's considering, I was thinking today about, the rapid change in, what we, how we handle things, and looking forward to, like, after this whole thing, how, certain things may be a little bit different, or we may have been a little bit shoved a little more into the 21st century, both businesses and, technology and all that, because a lot of people who were, somewhat avoidant or resistant of certain things, You know, and not just previous generation people, you know, younger generation included, because, you know, myself included, I remember, you know, throwing up the Bard's website, you know, the BardCon website in 3 days. It was like, you know, I was thinking like, wow, I mean, I've done websites before, but I've never done it quite that quickly. So it's like we're all kind of stretching ourselves and learning new things and, you know, picking up new things. But I was just thinking about how much things have changed in just a few years. So this poem is just called My First Cell Phone. I got my first cell phone when I was 13. Well, it wasn't really mine. My mom bought it for me to use. It was a crappy little phone, not a flip phone, pre-flip, prepaid, with a 20-minute phone card. I got it when I was going on the 8th grade trip to Boston. We still had it back then before 9/11 got it canceled, for a few years at least. It wasn't in my backpack. No, that. It was in my backpack. Never on. Heck, I didn't even know its number. And I didn't need to, because it was never meant to receive calls, only to make them in case of an emergency. And after that trip, I kept it, just in case. It sat still inside my backpack, except for when I took it out to show my friends, who were all jealous of me. Couldn't believe I had a cell phone. I got my first real cell phone when I was 16, one with an actual plan, 100 minutes a month. And if I went over those 100 minutes, I had to pay for it myself. I made many calls free after 9 p.m. to make sure that I never had to pay that overage. Last week, when I stepped out for a late lunch at 3 o'clock to Mario's Pizzeria, the same one I've been going to since first grade when I was in Catholic school, 5 kids from my old school, 6th graders by the looks of the uniforms, were all sitting around a table near me. And while I was eating and flipping through my autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, all of them were checking their recent test grades on their smartphones. The end.
Man, I didn't get my first cell phone until 18.
You know, the funny thing about it is when you consider, like, what my cell phone is now, you know, I started off with cell phones so early, and everybody's like, oh, my God, you have one? And now, like, I purposely have an obsolete phone because, you know, I like having some periods of the day where I'm not plugged in. And so you think of the compare and contrast,
right.
It's kind of funny. But, you know, but once upon a time, everybody's like, oh, my God, you have one of those.
Yeah, I remember when I was in, like, so back in, like, 1995, I was on vacation. We were staying in my aunt's condo. She owned a condo down in Naples, Florida. And we were staying there, and she wasn't there. She was letting us use it. And she had this big brick of a cell phone on her on the counter in the kitchen. And I just remember seeing it thinking, that's so cool. She must be important. Only important people and rich people have cell phones. Because, you know, in the movies and on TV, that's the only time you'd really see them. I think it was probably related to her job, but it was just kind of cool. It's like, I know someone who's got a cell phone. And how do you think about it? I actually do know someone who doesn't have a cell phone, and that's almost more of a novelty now.
Yeah, I know, right? The funny thing is, I actually had a toy of one of those brick cell phones, and when I was like 8, like when I had friends come over, I used to actually play around with it, pretending like I was on a phone call. You know? And they would be like, oh, my God, you know, because they saw those same movies that we all saw with those things. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I, and I also know that you remember getting those late-night phone calls after 9 o'clock when it was free, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, long distance was also still a thing, which isn't really as much anymore. So, you know, but it was just like the fact that, like, in just like a 10-year, 15-year period, like, you know, the changes that have been happening. I know that it's a cliche to say, but, you know, 20 years, it's, you know, it's really, like, it's always a little bit of a different world, but these last 15 years has really been a different world. And I think that, you know, now we're kind of being kind of shoved a little bit further into the 21st century. So that's just why I picked that point.
Yeah. It definitely keeps getting faster. I mean, even you think about 10 years ago, the kinds of stuff that we had. Okay. Lately it's been slowing down, but from let's say like 1995 to 2015, it's been a huge acceleration.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an awesome time to be young. I almost feel bad for the kids who are just in high school now or, you know, middle school now, who are, they don't have that acceleration. They're not used to the world without all this amazing technology, but they also then haven't gotten to see the evolution of it firsthand.
Yeah, because I remember, like, when we were, like, figuring out the internet while we were in school and, like, oh, we're all going on websites and we can post things and all that. Now it's just, like, that's just part of the daily routine, especially right now.
Right.
So, but.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, look at what we're doing right now, what we've been doing. So, well, I think we've come to the, you know, the ending moments of yet another good Bard's Virtual Poetry Reading in conjunction with BardCon Virtual, which is the website still up, and it's going to keep on being up. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, and Spilled Ink, I was going to say. So if you're a Spilled Inker joining us for the first time, first of all, welcome. Thanks for listening. Check out our other shows. If you have more poetry to send us, keep sending us your poetry. If you're in Spilled Ink and you missed today, that doesn't mean you're out of luck. You send us your stuff because we're going to be doing a lot of these, and we're going to have open mics at each one. So if you're interested in having your poetry read on the air, maybe if you're feeling a little nervous, be brave. If you're not feeling a little nervous, but you're feeling a little bit like you missed a deadline, you didn't. It's not over. Keep sending us your stuff. And if you're somebody who is not from this area, who's not into Spilled Ink, I'd definitely recommend you check out Spilled Ink, all the stuff, all the recordings that we have. I hope you enjoyed this show, and thank you for listening. Thank you to everybody who sent us your poetry. As always, I enjoyed it, and I'm sure James did too, even though I'm not going to speak for him because he's right here. And that's all I've got.
Yes, I can say for myself, I enjoyed it, and thank you all for, you know, being a part of it. You know, also want to thank everybody who has, you know, been a part of, you know, BardCon Virtual and these readings. You know, look, you know, between the combination of the views on this show, you know, the downloads from the website, and the people who have looked at the seminars and all those things, you know, we're approaching 2,000 people already who've, you know, been involved in all this, and we've still got, you know, probably weeks of this to go, so it's really, you know, it's really getting out there. Also want to thank, you know, all the people who have actually given tips on the BardCon Virtual website. Much appreciated, not never expected, but always appreciated, considering this is all for free, so you guys, you know, giving in those tips definitely helps us keep it all going, so thank you again for that.
Yeah,
please check out
definitely. On Virtual.
Yes. Thank you. We can eat now. So please check out BardConVirtual.com. Look out on the convention feed for some new, you know, workshops and presentations that are going to be updated, you know, pretty frequently. And we're probably going to do another one of these virtual readings, most likely early to mid next week. So still send in your poems to BardsVirtual@gmail.com. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, John Dutton. And we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.